From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 30th day of June, 2022. I'm Extension's Tug Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll discuss this morning's acreage and grain stocks figures with Lance Honig. He's the chief of the crops branch at USDA NASS, and we'll recap the numbers and how they were developed and changed across the United States from the March intentions numbers for acreage to the acreage figures today, and what the grain stocks did in the last 3 months. And then we'll be joined by Matt Bennett at agmarket.net to take up how the marketplace received today's USDA NASS numbers. And as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast to see what things might look like for the crop that's in the ground at this point with Mike Tenura with T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Along the way, we'll also review some of the numbers that came out yesterday as they relate to the USDA Hogs and Pigs report, all on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's recap some of the numbers from the United States Department of Agriculture. Corn stocks in all positions as of June the 1st totaled 4.35 billion bushels. That was up 6% from the previous year at this time. Of the total stocks, 2.12 billion bushels are stored on farm, up 22% from a year earlier. Off-farm stocks at 2.23 billion bushels are down 6% from a year ago. The March to May indicated disappearance is 3.41 billion bushels compared to 3.58 billion bushels during the same period of last year. Soybeans stored in all positions as of June the 1st totaled 971 million bushels. That's 26% higher than at this same time last year. On-farm stocks totaled 331 million bushels, up 51% from a year ago. Off-farm stocks at 640 million bushels are up 17% from a year ago. Indicated disappearance for the March to May quarter totaled 960 million bushels. Now let's turn our attention to the acreage report, where corn planted acreage was down 4% from last year. Soybean acreage was up 1%, but those aren't really the numbers that make that much of a difference. It's the total number of acres that are planted, and Lance Honig, who's the chief of the field crops branch at USDA NASS, in his executive update explained just exactly what happened to the acreage from March until now.
Just to kind of sum things up for corn and soybeans here, obviously a lot of times we kind of look at those two crops together as there's switching that occurs. But overall, you can see the total for those two crops combined, 178.2 million acres. That's still down 1.3% from what was planted to that total last year. You do see a few pound signs. We do still see record high corn and soybean combined in Illinois, Kentucky, Missouri, New York, and Wisconsin.
So total planted acreage between the two is down about 1.3% this year from last year. Usually there's about 180 million acres combined. It is now below that. Here are the corn numbers. In fact, that corn acreage number is 89.9 million acres. It's down about 4% or 3.44 million acres from the previous year.
In terms of acreage, we're now estimating 89.9 million acres planted for corn. That's up 0.5%, or just 431,000 acres from the March intentions. Still down 3.7% from what was planted last season. Harvested for grain area, we expect to total 81.9 million acres. That's down 4% from what was actually harvested last year. You can see the gray box at the bottom of the page here indicating that of those total acres that were estimated here, 4.03 million of those were still left to be planted based on the reports from the farmers on the survey work that we did.
Again, this is Lance Honig from earlier today after the release of the USDA reports, and as he was making his executive summary, YouTube Live, and this is still up on YouTube presentation to those who are signing off on the reports at the United States Department of Agriculture. He went on with the corn numbers to explain where things had changed across the country.
This map highlights the corn planted acreage by state and how it compares with last season. You can see mostly red states across the country, declining acreage across most of the growing area. In fact, down or unchanged in 35 of the 48 states. The largest decline again in North Dakota due to the planting delays there. You can see down 27% from what they planted a year earlier.
On that note, compared with last year, the planted soybean acreage across the 29 reporting states was up or unchanged in 24 of them. However, as you'll hear from Lance Honig, the 88.3 million acres that were put in the ground is much smaller than what was expected in March.
Looking at the acreage estimates, 88.3 million acres estimated to be planted. That's down 2.9% from the March intentions. Still up 1.3% from what was planted a year earlier. In fact, if you think about the corn number, we're now back to more corn than soybeans. If you remember back to the intentions, we were actually expecting more soybean acres than corn for only the third time ever. It looks like that did not happen in reality at the end of the day. So more corn than soybeans again this year.
That's Lance Honig, chief of the field crop branch at USDA NAST. July corn in Chicago finished the day down 26.5 cents at $7.43¾ per bushel. December at $6.19¾, 34 cents lower. July soybeans up 3/4 at $16.75. The November down 20¼. New crop at $14.58 on its settlement price. Bean meal up $6.70. Bean oil, however, down $2.67. Wheat futures in the July down 46¾ cents at $8.68¾ for the soft red. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the nearby contract 40 cents higher. Feeder cattle were up $2.87½ and lean hogs $1.47½ lower. Crude oil down $3.83 a barrel, and the diesel fuel off 12¾. The wholesale price of gasoline down 18¾ cents. The Dow at 30,834, down 165 points for the day. Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net now joins us to take a look at the USDA report numbers and the reaction in Chicago. Hi, Matt. Thanks for being with us. There was a surprise, of course, in the acreage figures. We can talk about that. But I'm wondering what you thought of the grain stocks numbers today.
You know, grain stocks numbers for me were a bit of a surprise. You know, last year, you had, I believe, around 4.11 billion bushels of corn, whereas this year, you know, we're actually a little over 4.3, which, you know, essentially was where the trade came in. I mean, to be honest with you, we were dead on as far as what the trade was thinking we were going to see, you know, for quarterly stocks. Now, to me, the basis and the spreads have suggested, you know, that we're actually closer to that figure we were at last year, you know, the 4.11. I don't even know, you know, it's going to be always very, very hard to pinpoint those closely, you know, but I'd say if you can get within 50 to 100 million bushels, you're in really good shape. I would tend to believe that we're still maybe 100 high, but moving towards harvest time frame, it's going to be interesting to see how it kind of plays out, because we all know that, you know, this corn grind, you know, for ethanol has just been fantastic. A lot of it's going to depend upon how we end up the export year, but as far as soybeans are concerned, I was maybe a little less surprised there, but I definitely felt like beans were maybe just a shade tighter than what the trade thought. The trade was dead on bean stocks as well, though. I don't know, John, that I ever remember a report when we were this close to the average trade estimate on both corn and beans. I just don't recall that ever happening.
What did you think of the on-farm stocks numbers for both the corn and the soybeans? They were pretty high by comparison to last year.
Yeah, you know, I thought that the on-farm, you know, up significantly, I think 377 million bushels. I mean, that to me, that was a bit of a surprise. You know, off-farm was down. That doesn't surprise me, though, when you stop and think the off-farm bushels, because, you know, obviously some of these folks have really been pushing hard to get a hold of bushels at the elevator. You know, you've seen some basis levels. You've seen even some big pushes up and beyond some of those basis levels. So, I mean, what that tells you is that the farmer indeed has been tight-fisted and said, you know what, you're going to have to come buy these bushels. Now, the problem that the producer has with that, you know, as a day like today, you look up and see what the board's doing, and obviously it's a rough day. And so, you know, most of these folks are moving to the September now. Yes, they're going to increase the number above the market they were bidding, but if you look at where the market is right now, I mean, that inverse, the $1.17, I mean, that's a huge inverse from July to September.
With that that many on-farm bushels up, what, 22% from a year ago for corn, up 51% from a year ago for soybeans. Are farmers at risk in states like Illinois, where both corn and soybean acreage was up, which was unique? Illinois and Wisconsin are relatively unique in the Corn Belt for that. Are they at risk that they might see maybe higher futures prices, but their basis widen out for old crop?
You know, it's certainly a possibility. I mean, the thing is that, yes, there's still a fair amount of bushels out there, but at the same time, until the dam breaks, you know, there's no question that you could have some awfully interesting basis levels. So, yeah, I guess my personal opinion is that, you know, it's going to be kind of who blinks first type situation. But one thing that I would say is that historically, it doesn't always work well, you know, be holding a lot of old crop bushels after 4th of July. Now, we all know that this crop is not made yet. I mean, it certainly looks awfully good in central Illinois in most places. Yes, there's some dry spots, but for the most part, the crop, the color looks really good. And of course, most people had really good stand counts. And so, you know, if Mother Nature would end up throwing a monkey wrench into this thing and you get a hot and dry scenario unfold, that can change everything. But if that's not the case, I've got to think that a person would be better off moving some of these bushels sooner rather than later.
I will talk about this question probably with Emerson Nafziger, but I'm wondering whether you've thought or heard from the agronomist that you deal with about the height of the corn, especially as some of it, not much of it, but some of it begins to tassel. If I remember correctly, elongation of the cell doesn't matter that much, but some of this crop is really, really short as it's starting to tassel. I went by, I don't know, a 4-foot cornfield yesterday that was shooting tassels at this point. And I'm just wondering what the agronomists are saying, because I know what farmers will think. They will say, I don't know whether that crop can actually be there, but I'm not sure that's really the case. I think that's just a matter of elongation of the cell and the heat that we had earlier on.
Yeah, I mean, essentially what we ran into, a lot of times, you know, whenever you get that great big plant, you know, you can associate that with awfully good yields as long as you end up getting good weather to finish out. Now, the way that I've seen this unfold, and Emerson can certainly shed more light, but just from the producer's mindset, just from learning over the years, you know, we actually had the ear size determined, most everyone in our part of the world did, before we got the real heat that rolled this corn up. Most of us had, in my opinion, a fairly benign time period whenever we were setting the ear size. So you have the potential, in my opinion, to have an awfully big ear on this corn. Now, the problem is you got out past there and a lot of this corn was anywhere from waist to shoulder high, and you started rolling it up every day for several days in a row. You stressed the daylights out of it. Is that going to hurt us? Well, you know, one thing that it did, it didn't give us a chance to build that super tall, you know, plant, but I'm not so sure that that was a bad thing, Todd. I mean, you know, essentially we rooted down. The height isn't quite going to be there, but my personal opinion is that we may have taken a little bit off the top, but I don't see it being any sort of remarkable number. I still think you've got a heck of a good potential out there as long as Mother Nature will cooperate.
What's the bean crop look like in your area?
Bean crop's coming on a lot better than what it had been. The problem we had with beans for quite some time there, whenever we couldn't catch a rain, they weren't growing. But we do have a lot of, you know, like your 30-inch row beans that are starting to close the gaps, that are getting a lot closer to that. And quite frankly, they look way better than what they did 2-3 weeks ago.
Anything else from today's reports that you want to discuss before you join us for our Commodity Week program this afternoon?
Yeah, I think the one thing you got to keep in mind is that you drop the bean acreage 3 million almost from planting intentions, and you drop it 2 million plus from the average trade guess and close it down on November bean 17¾ cents. That's not a good sign. You know, corn market down 29 to 30, I do think, and we'll talk more about it later today, but I think you probably have to look at this Supreme Court ruling on EPA today. I do think that it probably worked its way into our commodity markets, and I'm not so sure it didn't have a lot to do with this big drop in the corn price.
Hey, thank you much.
Thanks, Todd.
That is Matt Bennett. He is with AgMarket.net. Yesterday afternoon, USDA released the June Hogs and Pigs Report. It placed June 1 inventory of all hogs and pigs at 72.5 million head. That was just down slightly from the last quarter and almost 1% lower than a year ago, consistent with some of the pre-report expectations. Likewise, and as expected, market hog and breeding inventories were both down about 1% from a year ago, with market hogs down 0.25% from the last quarter and breeding inventories over 1% higher. Now, each class of the market hog inventories was also down, says Jason Franken of Western Illinois University.
Overall, the number of hogs weighing less than 180 pounds is almost 1% smaller than a year ago, which will be the market hogs arriving at processing plants from July through November 2022. The decline in lighter weight hogs partly reflects that the March through May pig crop is also 1% smaller than last year as anticipated, with about 1.4% fewer sows farrowed and about 0.5% more pigs saved per litter. Looking forward, summer and fall farrowing intentions are down about 0.5% and 1.4% respectively from actual farrowings last year. These numbers should similarly imply somewhat smaller slaughter numbers in subsequent periods.
Western Illinois' Franken says the frozen stocks of pork are rebounding but have not yet reached pre-COVID-19 levels. USDA, by the way, forecast U.S. per capita pork consumption at 51.1 pounds per person in 22. That's rising to 51.7 pounds per person in 2023 and matches the highest it's been since prior to COVID-19 when it reached 52.1 pounds. Hence, the strong domestic demand is expected, he says, to persist. The export market is a different story.
The U.S. exported 529 million pounds of pork in April, or about 19% less than in April of 2021. Much of the drop reflects continuously lower shipments to China and Hong Kong year over year since December 2020, with China's rebound from African swine fever. With lower exports to China, exports to Mexico, which were 20% higher, comprised 35% of U.S. pork exports in April.
USDA estimates U.S. pork exports, by the way, in the second quarter of 2022 to be 1.6 billion pounds, or about 15% lower than last year, and the forecast the last two quarters of 2022 to be better at 3.5% and 12.5% higher, respectively, placing the total for 2022 at just 6% below that a year ago. The first quarter of 2023 is forecast to be 1.5 billion pounds, or about the same as in the first quarter of 2022. Now, taking all of this into account, hog prices, says Jason Franken, are forecasted for the next four quarters in this way.
In general, hog prices tend to be higher in the second and third quarters with lower prices in the first and fourth quarters. Consistent with that pattern, this price series is forecast to average about $103.78 a hundredweight for the third quarter of 2022, falling to $91.70 a hundredweight by the fourth quarter, and then $92.59 a hundredweight for the first quarter of 2023, and rising up to $101.47 a hundredweight for the second quarter of 2023. These projections are consistent with the supply and demand scenario currently anticipated. However, if supply exceeds current expectations or if export demand softens, lower prices may be realized.
You may read more from Jason Franken about the Hogs and Pigs report released yesterday from the United States Department of Agriculture on the Farm Doc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Our theme song is written, performed, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. Find us online, listen to us on demand at willag.org, willag.org. Thereafter 6 o'clock this evening, maybe even before, you'll find our Commodity Week program posted with our panelists that will include for the afternoon Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Marketing, Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodity, Commodities, and Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net. Commodity Week, our weekly look at what's happened in the world of agriculture, up by about 6 o'clock this afternoon, on the air tomorrow on our home station and on many of these radio stations over the weekend. Now let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. Mike Tenura is here from T-Storm Weather at tstorm.net. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us. Let's get right to it. What are conditions on the ground like across the Corn Belt?
Well, it's dry. If you look at rainfall across the seven-state Corn Belt, 2022 is going to end up being the third driest since 1960. The only years that were drier were 2012 and 1988. Now, we are just a little bit wetter than what happened in 2012, and the reason for that is because of that rainfall that we saw last weekend. You might recall that a thunderstorm cluster unexpectedly developed in eastern Iowa and then moved across Illinois. Well, that was just enough rain to push us past 2012 and leave this year as number three driest. The number one driest was back in 1988, but that was a lot drier than this one, so they're not really comparable.
And what do you think will happen for the next week to 2 weeks or so?
Well, it is going to turn stormier, but along with that storminess comes a little more heat. We have a heat wave that essentially is going to begin in some fashion today. You might notice it's a lot warmer than it has been. Well, that's not going to last much beyond tomorrow, but then warmth comes back at us once we get into Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. So we'll turn a lot warmer by the start of next week. Now, with that change comes a better chance for thunderstorms. We'll see a clash zone set up across the Corn Belt where we have heat to the southwest, cooler weather to the northeast, and that puts that zone right across the Corn Belt. So we should see some decent thunderstorm clusters going forward. We'll even see some later today and tonight in parts of the region, and then continuing through tomorrow, including everyone listening in central Illinois. So it is going to be a little bit wetter, even in the near term. But the thing that we really have happen, we need big thunderstorm clusters to start forming, and we need them to continue. At this point, it looks like we will see some pretty big clusters starting up Sunday or Monday in the Dakotas and Minnesota, and then moving off to the east and south with time as next week progresses. So it looks wetter, Tom. It still looks pretty warm, but this is kind of what we need if we're going to get out of this situation, because anytime you're looking at the month of July having been followed by one of the driest Junes on record, that just tells you you're going to need rain and you're going to need it fairly quickly. It looks like we're going to get some, but 1 week of rain is not going to fix this problem. We'll need it to continue even beyond then.
It sounds like it is a tenuous situation at best for July.
I would agree with that. Ideally, we'd have cool and wet weather. It looks like we're going to have the wet weather, at least temporarily, but it is going to stay pretty warm. There are hints of a cool-off between July 10th and 15th, but even that looks to be more of a typical temperature setup as opposed to a cool setup like we saw in 1992 or 1994, something like that. But at this point in time, you just have to keep on watching the weather and realize that there are risks out there. But at least in the near to medium term, it looks a little bit better than it has.
Hey, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, great being here.
Mike Tenura is with T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Joined us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. There you'll find our daily agricultural programming, information from the agricultural economist, crop scientist, and animal scientist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, and the USDA reports. It's all at willag.org. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.